This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here with Richard Smart. We're talking about viticulture. You mentioned that some of the key decisions are made 2 months before picking. What sort of decisions should people be thinking about?
Well, I'll tell you about those in a minute, but let me just give you quite an appropriate biological example that your listeners will be able to understand. For those in the business of making babies, or have had that experience, the most important thing is the point of conception. And we're inclined to think that the point of birth is very important, but the factor that determines the baby is the mother and father. You know, the most important thing in life is to choose your parents carefully, etc. So even though the birth process is quite dramatic, it ain't the thing that determines about the nature of the baby. And in the same way, the ripening of the grape berry and its harvest is not the most important thing determining the wine. And we know that things that happen from the flowering of the vine through to the fruit set, the early stages of berry development, are also important in terms of the chemical compounds that are made and translocated to the berry or made there, are also important in terms of the ultimate composition.
Because if a vineyard's using the same clone all the way through...
Well, they typically do, yeah.
Yeah, won't you land up with the same mother and father consistently?
Ah, but you're getting confused here, my friend. If you've got a Chardonnay clone, you'll get the same fruit from all those Chardonnay clones in the one vineyard. Now, if you took the seeds from that, which is when you do get concerned with mothers and fathers, and planted them out, you'd end up with different vines, but you're only concerned about the fruit.
Sure.
So mothers and fathers don't come into it.
All right, okay, now that makes sense. Although you'd land up with quite strong parental influence, I imagine, if the mother and father are the same.
Well, that often happens, that vines are self-pollinated, yeah. But anyway, you don't want to get into grapevine breeding, you're only going to confuse people.
You mentioned also about flavour development in the vine. See, I've always, particularly, I've had people explain Sauvignon Blanc as going through quite distinct phases. You sort of said, all right, Sauvignon Blanc's a different case, but maybe other grape varieties like Chardonnay, it doesn't matter so much.
Or Cabernet, yeah.
Or Cabernets. But also one of the things they're looking for is tannins, isn't it? And acidity levels, isn't it? So wouldn't the ripeness of the tannins also determine picking?
You're telling me that someone can chew on a grape and tell how ripe the tannins are?
I certainly can't, but I don't know. Are you telling me that they can't?
Look, I think there's so much of a myth, this walking into vineyards and tasting grapes. Part of the winemakers wanting to have control over the viticultural process. But as I said, you know, they're wasting their time, they're 2 months too late. If winemakers are serious about wanting to make better quality wine, they could hire me and I could tell them what to look for in the vines, and they're too late during the harvest, I can tell you.
Then how do you determine when to harvest?
Oh, you measure sugar, acid, pH, berry weight, you might measure colour or tannins.
Okay, so you might take some berries, crush them and do some analysis,
yeah,
on
sure.
Those. Okay, so it's not a tasting thing, but it is an analysis thing.
Yeah.
All right. I always thought there was sort of a conflict between people who pick on sugar levels versus people who pick on flavour ripeness or flavours.
Well, the people who pick on flavour ripeness are wankers, and those who pick on sugar levels are technocrats. What else do you want me to say?
So which one do you think people should pick on?
Well, sugar, of course.
The sugar always?
Yeah. Well, the sugar and anything else you want to measure.
Okay, so it's all about...
But you've also got to realise that the harvest date doesn't matter bugger all. You know, come back to my birth analogy. Are the babies better people if they're born a week earlier or a week later? Are they?
Yeah, yeah.
You were born 2 weeks late. What sort of a person are you?
I know, but if I was born, say, 3 weeks earlier, I might need some special treatment to keep me alive.
That's going to extremes. If you were born 8 weeks earlier, you might need that special treatment.
Sure.
But, you know, my point is, so what? And that's what you've got to realise. The grapes ripening, by the time they hit the sugar levels that we use for mature winemaking, things don't change too much. So why are you imagining it so critical?
What about...
Let me tell you a little story about this guy I heard of in France, and he used to make a... Not France, in Spain. He used to make a great bloody performance, this going to see his clients. Wouldn't let them near the grapes. He came and tasted a few. And then he'd say, "We pick next Thursday." Why? "Because the flavour is right and the tannins are right." And blah, 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 blah. And OK, then his wife had a baby at the beginning of vintage. And he got there 2 weeks late because he's looking after his wife. Tasted the grapes. Blah, 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 blah. "We pick next Thursday." You should laugh.
I am.
I mean, that's the moral of the story. And these guys will never say, "Oh, we should pick 2 weeks earlier," because it means they're wrong.
So you're basically saying that as long as the main structural elements, the acidity, the sugars, those sort of things are ready to go, don't worry about the flavours at all. They'll be
no,
there.
No, I'm not saying that. Don't worry about the flavours, but I'm saying you can't worry about the flavours by tasting them.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you measure them?
With difficulty.
Obviously, I think I've got confused somewhere along the path.
Because you've been told some mythology by...
Can you set me straight on what happens after, say, veraison, the grape starts to change colour? What's going on inside the grape then? Because I'm getting... You've got sugars levels going up, the acidity levels...
Going down. They're gross changes, but the flavours are very... There's lots of flavour compounds and for some of them, their final level in the grapes determined before veraison. Take this green character that's a problem with Cabernet Sauvignon in many regions. Mm. That's typically associated with cooler climates and strong vegetative growth. This is one that does decline a little bit, but if you wait for it to decline, you end up with super high alcohol levels. Yet if you know what causes it, you can address it before veraison.
So that'd be like taking out some of the canopy?
Yeah, doing things like exposing the fruit and avoiding leaf shedding.
Okay, so it's more about vineyard work, perhaps, than...
Vineyard management, yeah.
I've obviously picked things up that incorrectly from people who...
Well... I don't know what to say. I mean, there are so many myths in this business. Have you ever asked an enologist a question and they've said, "I don't know"?
Once or twice, but not often.
No, not often, not often. Yeah, so, I mean, they repeat these myths so often that they become truth. And probably wine writers and wine journalists, commentators like yourself, are the people who create some of these myths. The one about vine age is a pretty classical one. If that wasn't given currency by the modern generation of wine writers over the last 15 years, it would be, not so important as it is now.
See, the myth for age, well, the story for ages, the older the vine, the deeper the roots, the better access to minerals. Is that completely wrong?
It's a total load of...
Hoo-ha.
Codswallop.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's no difference between young vines and old vines?
Well,
very young vines obviously are different.
No, very... Listen, it's a bit like people. Very young is very good.
It's very good.
Yeah, right. And you talk to some serious enologists who are prepared to tell you the truth and not rubbish, and they will admit that typically the virgin harvest, the first harvest, fruit, makes the best wine.
Fruit bomb.
Well, you're going to have to look at your vocabulary. You're quoting all this mythology.
Yeah, okay. I have heard stories where the first harvest you get a lot more fruit from.
You do, and you typically get the best wine. And the reason for that is that the crop load's not so good, the fruit's well exposed, the leaves are well exposed. And then because of the way we grow grapes, we then go through the middle age of a vine's life, where we have a lot more shading and the wines are not so good. But as the vines get older, they start to accumulate diseases and rots in their trunk and they lose vigour, and once again the fruit gets more exposed. And it's because The wines get better because the fruit's more exposed, the leaves are more exposed, not because the vines are old. And if you use modern canopy management techniques, you can have better leaf and fruit exposure any time getting old.
Okay. What other myth is a bugbear for you? You're obviously...
Oh, the one about low yield and high quality, that's another myth.
Yeah?
And it's a nonsense too. And again, it's been largely perpetrated by the wine writers. I always think about bunches of wine writers sitting around having a dinner and asking the waiter, can they please have steaks off skinny cows? Can they please have small carrots that have been starved in the field? I mean, what a nonsense to think that vines should make better because they make fewer. And yet that's got so much currency that you see people getting out and cutting grapes off the vine in the belief that the ones they leave will be better.
It's not true.
Well, in some instances, you can have vines that are excessively cropped.
Yep.
But again, if you manage your vines properly, you shouldn't be in that situation. And you don't need a low yield.
Okay, because I know in Marlborough with Sauvignon Blanc, they run reasonably high level crop levels for
that's
that,
right.
And you still get very, very good wines.
That's right.
And I've always wondered what was going on there compared to other areas.
Their vines are generally pretty well balanced.
So are you saying that crop levels are less important except for in the really extreme
situations? If you ask me to list half a dozen things that affect wine quality, I'd have crop level at about number six.
Okay. What would be the top five?
Or having the right variety in the right situation, in the right climate would be number one.
Yep. Okay. Number two?
And then canopy management. Number three would be control of the water relations. Number four would be pruning. What would number five be? Ooh, maybe hiring an Australian vineyard consultant. Expensive though they be. And then number six would be low yield.
Okay. All right. And any other real bugbears that you hear a lot that you know are just not correct?
That's about it, I think.
Excellent. Okay then, Richard, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye.